Parent Show, sponsored by Raydon Solicitors, award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raydonsolicitors.co.uk.
Good evening and welcome to The Parent Show here on Radio Verulam on 92.6 FM. I'm Steve Simpson. A little bit later on in the show, Lydia El Khoury will be meeting up with Chris Gomez, who is the intriguingly titled Head of Fun and Games at Tri-Time Kids Rugby School, and finding out how they've kept kids active and enjoying their sport over the lockdown period. First, though, I met up with Heather Burt, who is the franchise holder for Baby College right here in St Albans. This evening, we're joined by Heather Burt. Heather runs the Baby College, the Mid Hearts franchise, and along with her colleagues, teaches parent and child classes for 0 to 4-year-olds across St Albans, Harpenden and Welland. Heather, welcome to The Parent Show.
It's lovely to be here. Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure to have you here. So tell us, first of all, how did you become involved with the Baby College and how long have you been involved with it, both as a mum and as an owner?
Well, I first discovered Baby College when I was a mum of my now 8-year-old. Then I was living in Buckinghamshire and attended Baby College classes. I guess we were trying out various things around the area. I particularly like Baby College because I guess times were a little bit tough. I'm a musician, and it was a one-stop shop. It sort of presented me with lots of different activities in one place, so I didn't have to kind of travel to lots of different classes and shell out for lots of different things, because Baby College includes so many of them in one place. And I also really liked, I guess it appealed to my slightly geeky academic nature, in that every week there was a little topic about child development that was, I guess, there to educate and inspire us as the grown-ups in the classroom, as well as to have fun with the kids. So I got hooked and carried on with that while I was living there. Then I moved to St Albans and coincidentally was on maternity leave, and the local franchise here became available. So after contacting the directors and doing some training, I launched the Mid Hearts franchise in summer 2017.
So it was something which you'd experienced, which you'd enjoyed, which you saw value in and saw an opportunity. So well,
yeah, exactly. I'd always been really, I love teaching. I'm a musician, but I've always taught, and I've always thought that, you know, a teacher can teach anything, actually. You just need to learn the stuff, and if you're passionate about something and really interested in it, then it makes you a good teacher. And I guess at that stage the thing I was really interested in was child development, so it was a natural step for me.
So before we go too much further into the discussion, many people will not know what Baby College is, and maybe have some sort of vague notion that it might be a bit like the NCT a bit, but not quite. What exactly is Baby College, and how does it differ from other parenting experiences?
So Baby College isn't just about tiny babies. It's quite a good analogy, the NCT. I think for a lot of people who've been through NCT, Baby College is quite a good next step, because it basically grows with your child. And whereas when you've done your prenatal classes, you kind of looked at the birth with trepidation and maybe a week or two beyond, not necessarily focused on what to expect later and how to cope and how to fill those hours as well. There are just so many hours in a day with a newborn, and they're not doing very much yet. But then, you know, carrying on with children as they're starting to be a bit more independent and starting to communicate verbally and be a little bit more independent themselves in their movement, just guiding parents through the next steps the whole time, giving them ideas and informing them about what's beneficial that they can be doing with their children. And I think one of the things that I found as a mother is that actually a lot of what comes instinctively to parents has been shown to be extremely valuable by science now. And so when you're a new mum and you're being advised this way and that way by people that you know, people in your family, and some of the pieces of advice feel like they go against the grain a little bit because maybe they've come from people in a different generation, there's something really validating in hearing that the research is showing that actually how you're feeling and how you want to behave with your baby is, you know, evidence tells you that's the right thing to be doing. That's a good thing to be doing for your child's development. And that certainly helped me. So our classes are for 0 to 4s in groups, small groups. We keep them small, even in kind of normal times, non-pandemic times, so that children and the adults within the group can get to know each other.
Is that important, Heather, to build that sort of camaraderie between the parents as well? I know it was a big feature when I did NCT a million years ago, to build a sort of a support network. Is that part of your your principles too.
Yeah, we try very much to set, to encourage people to form WhatsApp groups and meet up outside sessions and so on and so forth. Particularly at the moment, it's really important, actually. I'm seeing that the motivations for people coming to Baby College may be a little bit different at the moment, because obviously people have been stuck at home, and socialising is definitely something that people come to do now. They want to meet, they want to find those support networks that are going to get them through the nights. So our program's for a year, and classically people will book on for a term at a time. So they will have that chance to, over the course of 10, 12 weeks, really get to know the people around them and the children around them. And kind of everybody celebrates when a child's achieved something that we've all been, hoping that particular child in that particular family will do.
Is it something, Heather, sorry to interrupt, is it something that a parent would come to once they've had their child, or would it be in anticipation of a child being born?
No, we have people book before they have a child, but it's to come to with your child. Although, having said that, at 4 weeks, your child may well be asleep for the entire class, may well be feeding through the entire class. And that's fine, actually, because it is as much about sharing in the activities that we're doing, learning some of the songs, learning some of the activities that you can then take home and do when you have got time with your awake child at home.
So the experience isn't just for the parents to teach parents. You did say there was a certain amount of teaching there. It's not just about teaching parents. It's about interacting with children as well and providing them with activities
too. Absolutely, yeah. The insight section is a very small bit at the beginning of the class, and the rest of it is teacher-led play, essentially, with explanations as they're going through.
And you mentioned also that this wasn't just for babies, it goes up to a four-year-old. So does that mean there's a sort of cross section of ages in each class, or do you have different classes for different age groups?
Yeah, we divide the children up into three age groups normally. So our 0 to 9 months come, they're called the infants, and that's a very gentle class. And then a little bit more mobile, our 9 to 18 months, we call them the toddlers, which it starts to have a little bit more independent play, expect the children to be moving a little bit more. And they start to do some what we call learning themes, which are then taken forward into the junior class, which is for 18 months up to 3 or 4 years. By learning themes, I'm talking about working with numbers a bit, working with colours, categorising shapes, that sorts of thing. So sort of pre-preschool type activities with those older children, as well as the range of everything else, and sensory play and crafting and dancing and singing and all those sorts of things.
Imagine that by the end of the 4-year curriculum, if you like, people are very reluctant to move on. It must be quite sad after that length of time.
Yeah, we do graduation ceremonies, but that's true. And as a result, we've actually written a second year programme for the juniors, because they quite often don't want to leave. So we have junior year two, which we're about to embark on in September, actually.
So just very briefly, recap, if you wouldn't mind, what a typical class might be. Where does it take place, and how many people would be there, and so on? What sort of things do you do?
A class would typically take place in some kind of rented community centre or something like that. In St Albans at the moment, we're running out of one of the Scout Halls near the hospital. And a typical class would have, well, at the moment, not very many people in it. But in normal times, we cap the classes at 15 for the little ones. So it's actually, it never gets huge. It never gets raucous. And I would say that, even in some of our venues, we probably won't even go back to that in September, even if we're allowed to, because we've really started to notice the value of having maybe 7 or 8 or 9 people, and really them everyone feeling that they're part of the community and can contribute. I guess it's that classic NCT size group where people do gel and start to meet up outside and so on and so forth. And within each class, they get used to the kind of formula of the class. So it follows the same shape each week. They would arrive, they would sing a hello song, there would be the insight topic, which obviously changes each week. Then there'd be a dance, maybe a challenge activity before it. And after the dance, when everyone's kind of raring to go and the blood's rushing around, then it sort of calms down straight away. And this follows right the way through all the years. They then start to be able to concentrate on activities with their parents. And it's all about playing with your individual child. And so the first activity, for example, then would be what we call our look and learn, where each parent would have an image to describe to their child. And it's almost like an exercise for the adults, a challenge to see how many words they can generate, sort of almost artificially, because we know that talking a lot to our child, more than we would normally, is extremely beneficial for their language development. So here are three fish. three fish swimming. Can we count fish? One, two, three. We've got a yellow fish, we've got a red fish, we've got a blue fish. You know, and how many things can you think of to talk about that fish before we move on to the next card? So that's an example of
I want to play that game too. Can I come along? I haven't got a child anymore, but can I come along? That'd be lovely.
You're welcome to visit.
So like a lot of businesses in these times, you've had to adapt because of the impact on health of COVID. And it seems that as a result of those changes, the business model afterwards is going to change slightly as well. We're all interested here to understand how business communities in and around St. Albans have managed through these really, really terrible times. How has your business adapted over the last 18 months or so?
Yeah, and it's interesting you say some of the changes are going to last. Several of them are, actually. Baby College is made up of lots of different franchises internationally, actually. But within the UK, we got together before the first pandemic lockdown was announced. And we realised this was coming and we decided to work together. So basically, all the franchisees were working online, delivering online classes, but opening those Zoom access details to anybody else's clients. So we ended up with a very, very large forum at its heyday, maybe 10 sessions a day that you could have joined. And that actually was that really got people through lockdown. And, you know, we've had so many testimonies of people saying that it was just so brilliant to know that we had non-stop Baby College at our fingertips if we needed it. But over time, obviously, that's the model's changed a little bit. But we are going to carry on with what we call Baby College at Home. We have been using it alongside our in-person classes, and that will continue for the foreseeable future because there is a demand for it. And it's actually just in normal times, there are weeks when someone has to go to the doctor,
exactly.
Or you know, baby might have a cold, or might suddenly need to have a daytime sleep. You know, we often have this situation where parents kind of feel they don't want to commit to a regular class because sleeps are so erratic and that sort of thing. And just to know that week you can just access an online class just seems to tick so many boxes that it would be almost foolish to do away with it now.
And what about the popularity of the classes? Has that been impacted by the lockdown? Have people sort of got more time on their hands to figure things out for themselves, or are they using that time to reach out to organisations like yourself for help?
I think that's a really good question. Another thing that I do is breastfeeding support, and I definitely think that there are flip sides to the lockdown for families, and without doubt it's been a very, very trialing time for everybody. I don't want to belittle that, but there have been positives, and certainly people being at home with their children, engaging with their children and thinking things and maybe looking around for ideas from places like Baby College at Home, people have perhaps become a little bit more self-sufficient. But as I alluded to earlier, I think the thirst for Baby College now is as much about just getting together with people, with real 3D individuals, and enjoying watching other people and other people's with their children as well, and celebrating everybody's achievements together. That's something you can't do so well online, I think.
So, Heather, you've mentioned a couple of times the insight topics which you have as part of each of the sessions. And since the period of curriculum lasts a whole year, there must be something like 50 insight areas which you share with your parents. What kind of insights are you sharing with them?
All sorts of different kinds of insights. And there are some core ones, that one or two of them, that we make sure they come up every term because they're so important. But they range. They aren't all about child development, actually. Some of them are about ideas for play. So, for example, we would talk about treasure baskets and when in a child's life treasure baskets might be introduced, and how a child could interact with the treasure basket at different ages and stages, and how it's beneficial. It promotes something called heuristic play, which is exploratory play. We talk about positive parenting. We talk about the nature-nurture debate. We're constantly alluding to brain development, but we tend not to try and blind everyone with science, because quite often we're dealing with people who are very sleep deprived. So we tend to try and just quote a little bit of research or some anecdotes. And I use visuals, actually, which obviously I can't do on the radio, but I use quite a lot of visuals so that people have something to hang on to. We talk about the development of the senses. We talk about reflexes, which I'm going to talk about in a minute. We always talk about sleep. Oh my goodness, that is everybody's favourite hot topic. I'm not going to deal with that one today.
Do you offer them like a 5-minute snooze during the
I bring my magic wand. No, we talk about normal infant sleep development, which can be quite an eye-opener for people, actually. Teething, solids, that sort of thing. So it really is those kind of topics that you need to know in just the same way that you need to know all the stuff about giving birth.
Anyway, how do you select the 50 topics more important than the 1,000 other things that that parents might get anxious about or need to know about?
That's a brilliant question, and it's not my job, it's Baby College UK's job, and it is constantly developing. They were redone, I think the insights were done last year or the year before, again by someone at the University of Oxford, so they are constantly reviewed and we're getting more and more of them all the time. And so at the end of each week, every client family will receive an email with quite a long article which they can read or not read or save till another time with references. So if they're particularly interested in something and feeling like they want to get into the academic side, they can do it. But otherwise they can just let it wash over them and kind of be vaguely aware that we talked about vestibular or whatever it is, and that's fine, get on with the class. So it's kind of, you know, people, some people it really turns them on and that's why they come, some people it's neither here nor there.
Well, our listeners here are desperate to be turned on, and we'd love to hear some of those insight topics. We're going to take a short break now, but when we come back, maybe you can take us through some of your personal highlights of the subjects to cover.
Sure.
You're listening to Radio Verulam 92.6 FM. Welcome back to The Parent Show with me, Steve Simpson, this evening. Tonight I'm talking with Heather Burt from Baby College, from the Mid Hearts franchise. Heather is the owner of that franchise here in St Albans, Harpenden and Welland. We were moving on to, at this point, to talk about some of the key areas of child development which you've highlighted in the classes which you run, the insight areas. And we've asked you to tell us about five or so that you're particularly interested in. So the first one you selected for us was infant reflexes. Why is that so important?
It's one of the core topics in Baby College because it sets people up to understand how their children are operating in the first few months and beyond, actually. So we all know what reflexes are. We have adult reflexes. You can play with a patella hammer on your knee and make you the lower part of your leg wobble. But when babies are born, they aren't in a position yet to make conscious decisions about how they use their bodies. Everything about them is governed by reflex. We think they're born with about 70 odd reflexes, and some of those reflexes would have been keeping them alive in utero. A number of them are helping baby when they're trying to get out, wiggle through the birthing canal, basically. So it's to do with the birthing process. But a large number of them are to do with life outside the womb, and people will be familiar with things like the rooting reflex, which is when you touch your newborn baby's cheek, it will turn towards your finger to take breast or bottle. The Morrow reflex, that's a really famous one, so because I believe the GPs test for it in the 6-week check still, because it's a very good indicator of essentially how well a baby's brain is developing, which is really why we're interested in reflexes, because they are how the brain is developing. So the Morrow reflex is the startle reflex, when the baby would flail with their arms and legs when they're startled, and you see babies doing it in their sleep quite a lot as well. What happens with reflexes is that they govern the body for a period of time, and then when the babies rehearse that movement over a period of time, the reflex itself is what we call inhibited. It means basically that a process has happened by which now the baby can either opt to make that movement or not to make that movement. So to use their body in a particular way or to switch it off, as it were. So an example of another reflex would be the palmar reflex. Everyone recognises with a newborn baby, if you put your finger inside their palm, how they clench it really, really tight.
Yes.
It emerges in utero and it's inhibited by about 2 or 3 months. And you can imagine, if you didn't inhibit that reflex, it would be extremely hard to pick anything up because your hand would be governed by a reflex. So it has to be inhibited. But the reflex has to happen for finger strengthening. And so that's a really good example of what the reflexes are all about. I just want to highlight one other one, which they all have, well, a lot of them have very silly names, long names, the symmetrical tonic neck reflex, which if you can just imagine a baby around the middle of the first year, on all fours, rocking backwards and forwards. I guess a lot of us who've had a child can recognise that as a stage that our children will go through. It's sometimes known as a pre-crawling reflex, but it's also extremely good for their near and far distance vision, which is developing just at the beginning, the second half of the first year, it's really starting to take off. So they're really starting to notice things that are coming towards them, how fast they're moving past each other, but also they're strengthening their bodies in preparation for crawling. And they need to stop having that reflex governing their body in order to crawl. And it's the same kind of thing. So these reflexes, they come and they go. And if everything goes as nature intends, they're all inhibited by around 18 months. Possibly 2 years. We sometimes see them latent during sleep beyond that, but that's really when they've stopped governing daytime activity. And one of the reasons why we're so interested in reflexes is that there's evidence that children who present at school with special needs sometimes are found to have retained infant reflexes. So for some reason, that process that is natural, whereby the reflexes are all inhibited, it's not automatic necessarily. And for some children, it seems to get interrupted. And in fact, Baby College was given birth to by a lady whose two children had special needs. And that journey took her on to study infant reflexes. And she worked with special needs children. And eventually she decided, look, what we need is a program that deals with this in the early years, really early years, where children are using these reflexes to help adults to understand the kinds of movements that we can help our children to do, encourage them once they're independent movers to make them as well, to try and minimise the likelihood of them having retained
reflexes. It's fascinating. It doesn't quite follow that we're waiting for reflexes to stop happening. Perhaps we're all waiting for the reflexes to start, but as you've explained it there, the reflex stop occurring is an important part of the development as well, which I guess a lot of people would not even think of, really.
People will have heard about reflexes 4 weeks before we give them the reflex insight, because some of the activities they'll be doing, we'll be differentiating. For example, in the infant class, one of the activities we do, we have three different movements for the three different age groups within that age group, because they're being governed by different reflexes at that time. So they'll kind of already know a little bit about it.
Fabulous. Well, I would find that a very interesting subject. I wouldn't skirt over that one at the start of the session. So shame on your parents if they do. Tell us, though, about the second one. This one perhaps is not quite so obvious. Vestibular development. What is that, and how do you introduce that to your parents?
Vestibular development is usually something parents haven't come across at all. They've probably never heard the word before they step into Baby College. And again, they will have by the time they've come to a couple of sessions, because we talk about it in the context of some of the activities we do. A lot of what we're doing at Baby College is working on the vestibular. Vestibular, a simple way of describing it, is it's our balance system, or it's part of our balance system. When we're learning about our senses, we know about sight, smell, touch, taste, and hearing. In fact, they are known as the extrinsic senses, and we have intrinsic senses too that are communicating with the brain about what our body's doing internally. And there are two systems that are involved with balance: the proprioceptive system, which basically is a sequence of sensors all over the body in our muscles, tendons and joints that are communicating with the brain. Brain's telling it what to do, and it's telling the brain what it's doing. But also the vestibular system, which is located in the vestibule, the hallway, to our inner ear. So that's how it gets its name. And essentially, that's the bit of your ear that will feel car sick, seasick, feel a bit peculiar when you come into land, can get infected and make you feel very dizzy. It's incredibly clever at telling our brain what orientation our head's doing. It does that using all sorts of different things. But the thing that I'm going to describe now, because it's easy to imagine and without a diagram, there are three semicircular canals on each side. And if you imagine that those three semicircular canals are in different orientations and they're full of liquid, and they work a bit like a spirit level when you're putting shelves up. So the liquid is sloshing around and there are sensors picking up where that liquid is lying. And that information is passing to the brain to tell your brain what your head's doing. It's not just going to the brain, it's also going directly to the eyes without going to the brain. So it enables us to immediately refocus whatever we're doing. Even if we're upside down on a corkscrew, we can still make sense of what we're seeing because of that vestibule ocular reflex. So that's what it does, why it's important. And when our babies are born, they have all the apparatus ready to go. They've probably done a bit of loop-the-loop in utero. Most babies do at some point. So they've probably started the process of training the vestibular. So it basically isn't telling them very much yet. So what we need to do over the first few years is help our babies and little ones to train their balance system, to train their vestibular. And that involves swinging them, sliding them, turning them upside down, giving them roles. And obviously, as soon as children can move, they make pretty sure that they do all those things, because that's what children are programmed to do. You know, we take them to the playground and they don't stop. With babies, we can just leave them lying down if we want to. But actually, if we dance with them, and if we take them up and down, and if we swing them to other babies or around in our arms, all these things are helping their balance system to be trained. So we're doing that with our little ones. Dancing around the kitchen is a brilliant thing to be doing. It's so great. It makes you feel good as well. Do it at breakfast time. But we do it every class.
It's really fascinating. It sort of ties back to what you said right back at the beginning of the discussion, which was, if something feels right, it's probably the right thing to do. If you're feeling good about it, and you know, we all know playing with babies and holding them up in the air and makes everybody happy, but there's a science behind it, and explaining what that science is very important. So that's vestibular development, which we've covered now. The third of the five which we're going to look at today is gross motor milestones. How do you go about achieving them and recognising what those milestones are?
I've brought it up today because it's something that parents tend to worry about. And I think that's probably why it's in. And my message always is, when I'm delivering this insight, to try to remove all the stress and anxiety around milestones. Because a lot of what we see, especially if we're just doing a quick hunt online, refers to the mean age a child is when they can do a certain thing. So that is an average. And that can be useful if everyone's clustered around the average. But actually, what I'm more interested in is communicating to the parents the range of normal for when they can reach the milestones. So the classic motor milestones that parents are interested in would be crawling, sitting maybe before it as well, but crawling is a crucial one, and walking. And I just tend to cite those two ranges of normal, actually. I can tell them the others if they want, but it's just kind of blinding them with numbers and it just gives them an idea. So hands and knees crawling, the range of normal is between 5.2 and 13.5 months. So even if your child is 12 months, 1 year old, we think of a one-year-old maybe getting up and walking. It's not too late to encourage your child to crawl, and it's really, really beneficial for a child to crawl because it bilateral across the body, so it uses the two halves of the body in different ways. So it's really good for their brain development to crawl. I'm going to talk in a minute about where all these figures came from, because that's really interesting as well. But just before I do, the walking alone one, the range of normal there is 8.2 months to 17.6 months, with the mean at 12.1. So we think classically of a 12-month-old baby taking their first steps. And parents tend to get really worried if their children aren't walking by 16 months. But the range of normal takes you to 17.6 months. And these kids are taken from a very, very big study. And they took cohorts from lots of different cultures with different sort of genetic makeup from all around the world. So what we get is a kind of range of normal for an earthling baby to be able to do all these things, all right? And it can be really, really helpful, I think, to just take your head outside the box sometimes and just think of yourself as an earthling baby and compare yourself to all the other earthling babies rather than the ones that are in your NCT group, because they're quite a small sample generally. Quite a lot of parents do get concerned that their children haven't crawled, but I also come across quite a lot of parents who are quite pleased with their child because they're actually sort of up and, we think he's going to miss out crawling, he's going to walk. So the message to those parents is it's really, really beneficial if you can encourage them to crawl. The message to the first lot of parents whose baby missed out crawling is you can still do it. If you look at a playground, quite often there's a little tunnel for babies to crawl through. You can make tunnels out of boxes at home. There are so many ways that we can encourage our older child to do that bilateral movement. And 4.3% of those kids in that big study did miss out crawling. So it's a thing. People do it. They survive. It's fine. But it's still a really, really useful thing to be doing. So as I say, I'm going to come on to language in a second. But can I talk a little bit about memory first? Is that all right?
Carry on, just do it. Yeah, it's fine. It's quirky. Yeah, do it. Yeah.
So obviously, memory is completely crucial for learning. That's how we learn. We use our memories, and there are lots of different mechanisms that we can use in our play and in our daily activities that can help children to start to understand their memories and use their memories and work out things from 1 minute to the next. With a tiny newborn baby, that might look like poking your tongue out at the baby, and several seconds later, the baby poking their tongue out back at you. That is still memory, because they're still remembering you're doing it. It's very short-term memory. And that's really important, because in that first year, it's the short-term memory that's really going on. And it's quite easy to kind of assume that they're working on the same kind of memory as we are, but actually laying down those long-term memories doesn't tend to come till a bit later. So they might start being able to recognise a toy they regularly play with and get excited about it, or to anticipate a feed because they can see the signs of a bottle being made by the sort of middle of the first year. They might start responding to their name if it's been used a lot by the time they're 7 to 9 months. But these are things that are happening all the time, day in, day out. And I think I wanted to talk about memory today partly because I've seen quite a lot of anxiety around wider families through the pandemic and how people are worried that their children have not been able to connect with granny or grandpa or auntie Vi or whatever because they've not been able to physically be with them. And in normal times, I always talk about auntie Vi because auntie Vi, who they see every 2 months, is frankly going to be forgotten. And it might feel very, very rude to auntie Vi, who's made a very strong bond with that baby, but the baby then cries when auntie Vi comes 2 months later and 2 months later and 2 months later. But unless you're talking about auntie Vi and showing pictures of Auntie Vi and telling stories about Auntie Vi every day and talking to her on Zoom maybe every day, she is still going to be a stranger. And so I think that's a really important thing for parents to kind of know, because they can get really anxious that their children are antisocial, you know, in that first year. But so coming out of the pandemic, we can actually think, okay, so maybe they have developed these relationships, maybe even more differently than they would have done out of pandemic. There's a study that I cite for memory just because I think it's a really good benchmark. In the 90s, there was a study that took 12-month-old children and they gave them 5 toys which had a specific thing that you had to do with them. And they were toys the children would never have encountered before. So they were given long enough to learn how to do whatever it was with those 5 toys. Then they were assessed again 3 minutes later to see whether they'd remember. And they had about 70% of the children were able to remember 3 minutes later. So 30% of those children had already forgotten in three minutes.
So were they boys by any chance?
I don't know. Actually, that's a very good question. But then I think what happens next is really interesting because they assess them again a week later and then 4 weeks later. So a week later, 50% of the children could still do it. 4 weeks later, 50% of the children could still do it. So it looks like half our children around about the age of one are starting to lay down some longer term memories. So it feels like it's a range of normal thing. So you've got some children whose hippocampus is developing and they are starting to lay down longer term memories by then, and some who aren't. So, but that's kind of indicative of the range at 12 months. And it's just a stark reminder that before that, children might well have forgotten something the next minute. It might be in that 30%. And I've mentioned some of the things that they can do that parents can do with their children to help them with memory. But just talking through daily tasks, the process of changing a nappy, just using the same words over and over again, they can remember it. Reading books that are familiar, playing with toys that are familiar, with older children, getting them to categorise things or put things in order of height, that sort of thing. That's all about memory and learning about things, because basically learning a memory is the same, isn't it? Which leads me neatly onto language.
indeed. So covered memory, that probably the biggest marker in the development of a child is language, is it not? When they start to speak, when they start to communicate, and how many words they use, how quickly
it is. And it's really important to them as well, because once they can start to advocate for their own needs, it's hugely good for their mental health as well. Their sense of self-worth goes sky high, because they're suddenly a person with, and they can make stuff happen. Yeah, it's really, really brilliant. And for those children who perhaps are a little bit delayed verbally, enabling that somehow by giving them choices and helping them to point to answers or point to the thing they want, just giving them that ownership over what's happening to them can be a really, really good thing to be doing. But what I find interesting about language development is how the process happens in the first year and then changes. So our babies, much as we talked about before, are sort of programmed to do a set of things linguistically in their first year. And it's really interesting that I think that all the way around the world, they babble in the same way. It doesn't matter what culture they're from or what language they're going to be learning. They are going to still practice the same phonemes. And the first 6, classically, are B, K, M, D, G, and P. And we practice those in our infant classes. Week by week, we have a different one, and we'll spend time focusing on that. We might sing that sound, or we might make a story up about Martha, the myopic Mandarin or probably not that.
Really?
We have some silliness definitely in our classes. Prior to that, there'll be cooing. Prior to that, it's biological noises. But this vocal play starts to take on melody around 10 months. And that's the point we call it melodic utterances, when the child will start to inflect, stringing together those babblings in a way that slightly mirrors the culture they're from. And that's when the magic starts to happen and they start to sound like your baby. And often the first word will appear fairly soon after that as well. But by the second half of the first year, they are starting to become baby of your address, your town, your country.
That's incredible.
It is
amazing.
We should say also that we use signing quite a lot in Baby College, and we use it because it's fun, and also because what we have found is that for those children who are wanting to be able to communicate, are trying to communicate but haven't yet quite got the vocal skills to be articulate, having a gesture to accompany the words that they're trying to say can really help them articulate it. So it seems to help children get over that hurdle of being frustrated at not being able to communicate. And just as we use gesture in our speech to help us, and I'm doing it now, even though I'm on the radio, to help us communicate, babies really, really seem to enjoy doing it and find it helpful. And some carry on doing it through toddlerhood and beyond. And for some, it sort of just gets them over that initial hurdle.
Heather, we could talk all night. You've taken us through just five insights, and it has been, well, an insight for me, an absolute eye-opener to what can be covered in this sort of class. I'm sure people can find this themselves, but how do people get in touch with you? What's the best way to find you and so on? Where's your website?
Yeah, so there's a Baby College website, www.babycollege.co.uk, and within it, I'm the Mid Hearts franchise, so you can search by area. But frankly, the easiest thing to do is just to Google Baby College St Albans, and you'll find it that way.
That's what I did, and that's why we're talking now. Heather, thanks ever so much for joining us here on Radio Verulam, and we wish you all the best of luck with Baby College and look forward to talking to you again in the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
I'm Lydia Elkouri, and tonight we're going to be speaking to a head of a rugby school called Try Times, in case you haven't heard of it. So I'd like to welcome Chris Gomez, who's the head of fun and games at Try Times. How are you doing, Chris?
Very well, thank you, Lydia. Very well indeed.
Great to have you with us on the show tonight. I've heard of Try Times, so I want to hear more about it in case those parents out there haven't heard of it. Tell us all about it.
Sure. So Try Time Kids Rugby is an outdoor kids sport club, and it's all for 2 to 7 year olds. So the main thing about it is helping children to understand what it is to have fun outside and play sport. It's everyone's welcome. Everyone's included. It does have rugby in the title. We do use rugby as the kind of main principle of what we do. The reason why rugby's so great, we think, is because it's got some brilliant sporting principles. It's got teamwork. It's got respect. It's all about following instructions. It's all about having fun as well. So the kids learn through fun. We want to have them laughing. We want to keep them active. And we want them to realize that sport is fun, and it doesn't have to be just for really great kids who are fantastic at sport. But we find that what we do is all about building their confidence, and it's obviously fantastic to watch them grow as we sort of keep them from the age of 2 to 7 a lot of the time.
That's a very active age group, I'd say. Is it weekends, weekdays? When do you do your classes?
Well, we here in St Albans and Harpenden, we work on Saturday mornings between 8:45 and 12:30-ish. St Albans, we have 3 hours in a row because we've got around about 170 kids. And in Harpenden, we have 2 hours in a row. Yeah, so we in some places around London, some of our venues, some of our clubs work during the week. But here in St Albans and Harpenden, it's just Saturdays.
That sounds like a very busy way to start the weekend. But tell us, so it's been a crazy 18 months and we can't have any guest on the parent show without talking about how have you gotten through the last 18 months and what's it like being back in action?
The last 8 months has been crazy for everyone, hasn't it? And I think it's in many ways been fantastic to see how much people need to be outside It actually reinforces that feeling that, my gosh, we need to just be outside more and the kids need to be outside. So having something that offers the parents a very sort of structured way of the kids being outside and having fun is obviously great. And for us, yeah, it's been fantastic to get back into action. We really miss it. Listen, I've been doing this for 13 years. My daughter's 13 years old. I started doing this when she was one. So that long a break was the longest break I have ever had, and the longest break that a lot of our coaches ever had. So obviously the kids, a lot of the children have struggled with being at home. A lot of kids, even really young ones, have struggled with mental health issues,
yeah.
Whether it's, you know, they're frustrated about being inside and just need something to do, or whether it's deeper issues than that. It's been hopefully a great release for them. Now, we, in the time off, we actually tried to keep busy. A lot of people, I think, just sort of closed the doors. But because of the fact that we are a community-based sports group, we wanted to stay as active as possible. And because of the relationship we have with our kids and our parents, we knew that they all needed something to do. So throughout lockdown, we created videos that we'd sent. So we got the kids, we were outside, we created videos so that they could do things in their garden, do things in their living room that was all still about, you know, rugby and having fun. We also did a charity run, an indoor charity run and an outdoor charity run, actually, where our coaches ran to the equivalent of running from every major rugby stadium in the UK all the way around the UK. So that was fun. And it really wanted to keep not just our coaches connected with that, but we shared it with our parents to sort of show them it was that, you know, making sure they still had a connection with the parents and with the kids. So for us, yeah, definitely it's been great to be back. Absolutely fantastic, obviously. And I think as much as anything else, as I say, just to help the kids get back outside, really alleviate any of those mental health issues and just start having fun again for us and them.
Yeah, get them back to normal, get them muddy and dirty and wet. And it must have been a struggle having to have that distance from the kids that you're working with. It must have been really frustrating.
It was frustrating. And it's really, really important for us that whilst we are back and whilst we are now back into pretty much what we were doing to a great degree, the way we do things has changed massively. And I think it's changed and it will always be like this now. So we used to have, you know, share coaches, share the pods of kids, and they would go from game to game and they would wander around this zone that we had within the park. Now what we've done, obviously, to try and keep as much of the social distancing in place as possible, is we've broken up into pods, and the pods stay with the coaches throughout the entire term. And everything happens within that pod. And there's a socially distanced aspect between each pod. So there's space for parents not to be mingling with one another too much as well. So all of that's been really interesting. And the really sort of crazy thing is that we've all really enjoyed that way of working because we've got closer with the kids rather than kind of going from coach to coach. And actually the fact that they're with these coaches and the coaches know them really, really well, it enables us to make sure that they are getting better. And
that's brilliant. And actually, we're hearing it. There's kind of a regular theme. People have actually innovated or kind of restructured things. And there have been some positives out of the whole lockdown. But in total, how long were you closed?
Good question. We stopped for, obviously, when the curtain fell and we all had to stop and we all had to go indoors, was pretty much at the end of our term. And so we kind of stopped at that point very naturally. And then we weren't able to open the doors again. We started when we could start doing one-on-ones. And then when the rules came out that there could be six people in the park, we started putting five kids and one coach together. And even the kids were socially distanced. And that was hard. So there was 2 meters between every child at every point, every time during the hour. So we've come back in the best way that we could. And then we had to stop again. And then we did a sort of a hard stop. So I'd say all in all, we'll stop for 6 months, maybe more.
But it's brilliant. And I'm sure parents really appreciated the fact that you did whatever you could, given the circumstances. Like when you could make it bigger, you made it bigger and smaller, but at least tried to provide an offering. Whenever I'm finding that I don't hear a peep out of my kids about any of their after school activities now, they are so happy to go. It's been a good lesson from that perspective.
Agree. And I hope, you know, it's funny because we hope that everything we do, given that our kids are so young, age 2 to 7, and within that we break them down, we have kids age 2 to 3.5, then another group which is 3.5 to 5, and another one which is 5 to 7. And our coaches specialize in training kids of that age and at the different stages. So, you know, we bring them through from those 2 to 3.5, where they don't know how to catch and don't know how to run and don't know how to follow instructions, to being able to play a decent game of rugby at the age of 7.
That's impressive.
And of course, it's not contact rugby. It's you know, we get to a point where we're playing tag rugby. But we hope that actually, because the kids are so young, as I say, we're just encouraging them to like sport anyway. And hopefully our kids are going to be the kids that would never complain about going off to do sport. That's what we hope for.
So tell me, you had an exciting event at the weekend. Tell me a little bit more about that.
We really wanted to bring something for our parents that, again, would sort of set us apart as a company. And, you know, we hang our hat on the fact that our coaches are second to none. Right. That's number one. Our coaches are the best coaches. We search long and hard. We have a training process. But we wanted to bring something as much for the parents as for the coaches. And we were lucky enough to make contact with an ex-England and Saracens player called David Strettel, or Stretz, as we call him. And he actually become our ambassador coach. And so he goes from club to club. So he's visited all of our 13 clubs in London. And at the weekend was at Harpenden. And so he turns up. He chats with the parents and he gets stuck in with the coaching. He doesn't sort of sit there looking like an England rugby player. He gets fully stuck in with the coaches because he's got 2 young kids and he's absolutely brilliant. And we're very, very lucky to have him. And so he was there at Harpenden at the weekend. But yeah, it's great. And he goes from club to club and the kids have got no idea who he is. He's just a really good coach.
Yeah.
But a lot of the parents who know anything about rugby will recognise him. It's quite a nice thing to be able to give back to them as well.
Yeah, I bet there was a few starstruck parents around the place. Sounds like great fun. Talk to us about the future. What's coming up in the second half of this year? You said you've kind of tweaked things a little bit. Any more events coming up?
Well, we're looking at a few events, actually. That we have a number of our sites. We do camps, so there'll be some summer camps. We're looking at how we can do that differently as well. So perhaps not just a regular summer camp, but making a bit more of a sort of summer extravaganza, and there'd be loads of action activity and not just dropping the kids off, but they're being incredibly entertaining for everybody that comes along. But we're coming to the end of our term now, and our new term starts on the 4th of September. So places will be open for booking now. So I'd urge anyone who's interested in coming along, if you've never been before, you can book a trial, come along and see how it goes. Places will go fast. So if you want to get involved and you want to come along for a trial, head to our website, which is www.trytimekidsrugby.com. And you can book your trial, come along to your local club, whether that's St Albans or Harpenden, and give it a go. But really for us, it's more of the same. It's about, you know, we're constantly reinventing our games and constantly reinventing the way that we progress kids, and constantly looking at how we can ensure the kids are having a great, great time.
Brilliant.
But actually more importantly, certainly sign up as soon as possible for the autumn term. But we have loads and loads of coaches. That's the key for us, by the way. It's not just about having 1 or 2 coaches per kids. All of our pods with 12 to 15 kids are going to have 3 or 4 coaches. So it's really great. We're able to offer kids, especially kids who are coming maybe with learning difficulties or who are a bit shy and never done this sort of thing before. We're able to give them a real almost one-to-one coaching service.
So just to check, TRY, obviously.
TRY, yes, absolutely.
Just in case.
TRY, Time Kids Rugby.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Listen, it's been great to chat to you, Chris. Best of luck with the summer camps with the autumn. And thanks for joining us on the Parents Show.
Thanks a million. Thanks a lot.
And that is just about all we have time for on the show this week, and indeed for this season of the Parents Show.
Yes, and we'd like to thank all our guests who have contributed over the last 6 or 9 months. It's been very difficult for everybody. We haven't been able to be in the studios, so everything's been conducted over Zoom or Zencastr or an online platform, and we'd just like to thank them all for taking the time to be with us.
It's been really interesting, actually, this last season, because we've spoken to so many people who have been really willing to embrace using the new technology. We're particularly thankful for the shows that we've done with Raidens, actually, and talking about different legal subjects, which have allowed all of our listeners to get some expert advice on the show, which has been, I think, an excellent highlight this season.
Yeah, for me, I enjoyed bringing the voice of the lockdown dads to the parent show this year.
Yeah,
we had a lot of fun putting those episodes together, and we've got plans to bring some more subjects to the airwaves after summer sometime. So watch out for that. What have your highlights been?
Well, you know, I think it's been great tapping into the local community and how they've coped with the bumps and bigger than bumps over the last 18 months. You know, the words like resilience, innovation, tenacity, grit, you know, they've powered through. They've provided fantastic local services to all of us through, you know, very, very difficult times. And now we see them coming out the other end. And it's lovely to hear their stories and to get a chance to showcase them on the parent show.
See, look, I want to make a link, a great smooth segue there between bumps and when we spoke to women who were having their babies during lockdown. That was really interesting because people have been through a really tough time, and also the shows where we've spoken to kids and how they've been dealing with homeschooling, which has obviously been difficult for children and parents alike, nationally but also locally. So it's been good to hear from them, and they have all dealt with that with great resilience. You're right, Lydia.
Yeah, and it's been great also covering not only the humorous subjects and the lockdown dads and their antics, but also touching on some of the really sensitive issues around both parenting and the children at school. That's been a fascinating insight into what's been going on in the schools.
And even though it has been really so disruptive with everything that's going on, I think we've managed to put on one of the most varied and interesting sets of shows in the history of the parent shows. Everyone's, as you said earlier on, Dave, everyone's rallied round. And despite the social distancing, we've made it work. It's been great.
Yeah. Well done, everybody.
Well done indeed. And it's been a pleasure speaking to our guests. As always, looking forward to a new show in September. So anybody who's listening in, there'll be shows on every Thursday. There'll be repeats of the shows that we've recorded over the last 18 months. So stay tuned to Radio Verulam 92.6 FM or online at radioverulam.com. And whether you're going away for the summer, a vacation, staycation, keep Radio Verulam in your mind and tune in. And we'll be back with some fresh shows in September. Thanks for listening.
And a big thank you to our sponsors, Raiden Solicitors.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.